This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to out across America. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. Hopefully this evening things will run a little more smoothly than they did last night, because we have with us a very special guest, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. David, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me on your excellent program.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. And we were going to be talking tonight about the Bill of Rights. We've already talked about the First Amendment, and so I'm just going to let you go ahead and discuss the Bill of Rights. But before that, let me just point out for our listeners that the founding fathers of America believed that man was basically sinful and you couldn't trust him with power. And so it was that Thomas Jefferson wrote, "In matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution." And he was really echoing the ideas of John Locke, that government governs best, it governs the least. Our founding fathers were afraid the government one day would be used tyrannically, so they added the Bill of Rights as a restriction on the power of the central authority. And when you understand that, it is a restriction not on what will happen to the state or locally, but Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged, and it would not then be abridged by either the federal or the state government. But so much of what is in the Bill of Rights is a limitation on the power of the central authority. And, of course, it would be, as it said in the Tenth Amendment, the powers not, that were not specifically given to Congress were to be limited to the states and to the people. With that as a thought, David, you pick up the story.
Yes, as we mentioned already, the First Amendment really deals with religious freedom in all of its phrases, including phrases such as freedom of the press, which in those days was publishing sermons and other Christian books and so on. The primary freedom, essential for all other freedoms, is religious freedom. The Second Amendment takes to task what the founders recognized, that in their battle with Britain, in their Declaration of Independence, one of the tools that the king attempted to force upon them was the confiscation of the weapons. Williamsburg is an example of this, where in the city the gunpowder and the guns and the bullets and all were confiscated by the British troops, and Patrick Henry and several others had to raise an army from outlying areas and come and demand that the British return the weapons to that town of Williamsburg, because if you confiscate the guns of a people, you confiscate their weapons, you confiscate their ability to protect themselves from tyrannical government. And that's what the Second Amendment was put in place in the Bill of Rights to do, to protect us as citizens from a tyrannical government. In a sense, it's the last resort If everything else politically has failed, if everything we have attempted to redress grievances has failed, ultimately it may come to bearing arms to protect ourselves and defend ourselves, our freedoms, against a tyrannical government.
And that was one reason why I really think that there's such a conscious effort to destroy our military, so that if there ever were problems in America, they'd have to bring in foreign troops to maintain law and order. And just as we have all sorts of foreign troops helping us in Iraq, I fear that foreign troops would be here in America. It's not too far away, ladies and gentlemen. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. I think our rulers, the wicked and evil people in Washington, D.C., who would disarm our people, remember what brought on the Russian Revolution. What brought on the Russian Revolution was the Russian troops refused to fire on Russian citizens, and when they were ordered to, they refused, they mutinied, they sent in another several companies of men to arrest the first group that had refused to fire on the populace, and they refused to fire on the populace too. They went over to the mutineers, and that was the beginning of the end of the Russian monarchy, when the troops refused to carry out the directives of their leaders. And it wasn't very long, of course, before the whole country was in turmoil. It was in the middle of the First World War. Over 4 million Russians were already dead in this nonsensical war. Everybody was sick and tired of it, and of course there was an organized effort at that time to create a feeling of disillusionment in the people, and of course it was a short step from there to Kerensky, and then a short step from there to Vladimir Lenin and Trotsky, and of course Lenin was financed by Western capitalists, and of course was totally subservient to Lord Milner, who represented the wealthy class in England, and of course the gentleman who'd come from the Federal Reserve Board. And anybody out there who doubts that, you need to get a book called British Agent. I quote that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. What you have to understand is that this whole thing, this terror, this horrible situation, oppressive regime, was foisted on the Russian people with the full help and support of the wealthy financiers in England and in the United States. The book British Agent, written back in the 1920s by a man named Bruce Lockhart, who was actually there. He was the man that Lord Milner sent to Russia. But let's get back to our situation here in America.
Let's get back
to our Bill of Rights and the right of the people to keep and bear arms.
And the Second Amendment is under attack, not only on the federal level, but many states, Maryland being an example. I'm not certain of the laws there in California, but here in Maryland it is extremely difficult, nearly impossible, to obtain a handgun for a law-abiding citizen who's never been arrested, never had anything charged, has never had any criminal record. It does not matter. It's nearly impossible to gain a handgun here in Maryland. The violation of our Second Amendment has gone forward. The Second Amendment reads, "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Now the problem is, the view put forward by those who hate our Constitution and hate our freedom is that the way to interpret, the proper way, according to them, to interpret the Second Amendment...
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll bring our other stations right on. Well, Dr. Stan and Pastor David Whitney is just talking about how they are misinterpreting the Second Amendment, because it says, of course, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But how are they misinterpreting this and twisting the meaning of the words so that they can justify taking the weapons away from the people preparatory to their enslavement?
They're claiming that the interpretation of the Second Amendment is the collectivist interpretation. That is, the Second Amendment only protects the right of the people collectively to bear arms. In other words, a state maintaining a National Guard or a police force and this kind of thing. It's very easy to disprove this claim. It's a false claim, because all you have to do is say, well, then let's interpret the rest of the amendments. Let's interpret the rest of the Bill of Rights by this collectivist view. So if you turn this collectivist view on, say, the First Amendment, well, the First Amendment says that we have the right to freedom of the press. Oh, well, you'd say the collectivist view means we only collectively have the right to the freedom of the press. In other words, ultimately, only the state has the right to publish books. Only the state has the right to publish newspapers, magazines, etc. No individual has the right to do that. So that interpretation is obviously completely at odds with the purpose of the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is individual rights. It's not speaking about collective or state rights. As a matter of fact, it's speaking about the restrictions on the federal government, the restrictions that, prevent them from violating the individual rights. So the individual has a right to freedom of religion. The individual has a right to bear arms. That is the proper interpretation, and that's very clear by just reading some of what our founding fathers said. For example, George Washington said this: "Firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself. They are the American people's liberty teeth and keystone under independence. To secure peace, security, and happiness, the rifle and the pistol are equally indispensable. The very atmosphere of firearms everywhere restrains evil interference. They deserve a place of honor with all that is good." Very clear that Washington's understanding was the individualist view of this amendment as the others. The other aspect that is misinterpreted here is the meaning of the word militia. It's not just the National Guard or not simply a state police force. If we go back to the era of our founding fathers and were to use a dictionary that was common in that day, Noah Webster's, the first American dictionary published in 1828, defines militia as this: the militia of a country are the able-bodied men organized into companies, regiments, brigades, with officers of all grades, and required by law to attend military exercises on certain days only, but at other times left to pursue their usual occupations. So in other words, the basic citizens were to be armed and trained as the militia. English law, tracing all the way back to Alfred the Great, AD 871, required that all able-bodied men purchase weapons and be available for military duty. The idea is that every able-bodied man would be, if he was not a criminal, not convicted, he would be part of the militia. He would have his own weapon. He would maintain his own weapon, and he'd be available in case of invasion or in case of insurrection to be called up as the militia to defend their community. So if the Second Amendment were only to protect a collective right of the state to maintain a police force, it's completely out of place in the Bill of Rights, which is designed to protect individual rights. So our framers saw that individual ownership of firearms was a protection of freedom against foreign invasion, but also against the tyranny of a government, our own domestic government, out of control. For example, Samuel Adams, often called the father of the American Revolution, said the Constitution shall never, and underline that word never, Constitution shall never be construed to prevent the people of the United States who are peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. Obviously, this is the opposite of what the gun control people are after, and they are working day and night to try to remove our Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms. Thomas Jefferson also said, "No free men shall ever be debarred from the use of arms." Contrast that with, say, the laws in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., where you cannot, even if you're a law-abiding citizen, you cannot legally even obtain a handgun to protect yourself. What's the result? You look at the crime statistics in Washington, D.C., it's one of the most violent, one of the most dangerous places in our nation. It may not be number one as the murder capital. I think Baltimore still ranks as number one, but it is perhaps the second or third most violently dangerous, and so it's obvious when you take guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens, you do not have a safer society. You have a more dangerous society, because the criminals obviously will never obey the gun control laws. It will only be the law-abiding citizens that bother to make any concern about that. But beyond just personal protection and protection of our families, founding fathers were very concerned about a tyrannical government. They recognized that as careful as they were in constructing the Constitution, as careful as they were in drafting this Bill of Rights and putting all of this together, all these checks and balances, all these protections, they recognized that wicked, dishonest, evil people would seek to undermine the very foundations of freedom and liberty, and that the only final defense against it was that the people were armed. Noah Webster, one of our founding fathers, said in 1787, before a standing army or a tyrannical government can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are in almost every kingdom in Europe. The supreme power in America, that is, the federal government, cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole body of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any band of regular, that is, professional troops, that can be on any pretense raised in the United States. Dr. Stan, I think you're right to say that there may come a day, particularly as the gun control laws move forward and they try to confiscate all weapons in the United States, as they have done in Great Britain and in Australia. I understand they've passed these draconian gun control laws that have just rounded up all the weapons. That is a preparation for a day when a takeover is going to be attempted. And, of course, it won't be our own troops that will do that. They will bring in foreign troops to do that, because they recognize our own troops would at least have enough care for their fellow citizens not to fire upon them, but bring in German troops or Russian troops or whatever. They will have no such compunction in firing upon American citizens.
Maybe we could even bring in some Iraqi troops. There, we're creating the Iraqi army. Maybe those units would like to come over here. As difficult as it may seem to our listeners, there really are wicked people who would like a dictatorship in America, because they have a different attitude. They believe we need a ruling elite. They believe the government has to provide for the people. They believe in a ruling aristocracy. These ideas go back to Plato. They've been certainly enforced that this is what feudalism is about, an all-powerful state, the feudal lord, and then everybody else was a serf. But you had to disarm the serfs. Why do you think that they really want to take away the guns from the people? Do you really think Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein, doesn't want to, you know, when her life was, she felt it was at risk in San Francisco, she insisted on having a permit to carry a gun because her life was endangered. So why does she want to disarm everybody else? Because she's a fascist mentality, she's an elitist, and there are a lot of them within the Senate, there are a lot of them at every aspect of our society, people who believe that they have the right to rule over the rest of us, and of course will run roughshod over our Constitution, and they are violating the Second Amendment to the Constitution. But the trouble is, most people don't even understand what it says.
That's right, and they believe, most people believe the lies of the gun control people that completely distort the Second Amendment. And as I explained, it's very simple to explain the logic of the Second Amendment by applying their twisted logic to the First Amendment. And you realize, wait a minute, that's completely wrong. They're not, obviously, in the First Amendment, they're not talking about a collectivist right to freedom of speech. That is, the government is the only one with the freedom of speech, or a collectivist right to freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, and all of that. No way. It's an individual has these rights. That's what the Bill of Rights is all about. But we know that they must destroy our Constitution and they must destroy our Bill of Rights before they can force upon us this new world order. And Dr. Stan, I think it's pretty hard for most Americans to grasp this, because we have enjoyed the blessings of liberty that have been bequeathed to us by our founding fathers in this magnificent document, the Declaration, as well as the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And we've enjoyed it in a sense. I think we've done it in injustice. We've believed that somehow these documents operate on autopilot. That is, there's nothing required by us as citizens to maintain them, to keep them in force. We just sit back and let the autopilot run, and we will have our liberties without any effort on our part. Well, our founding fathers said the opposite. The only way, you've got to be involved in an animating contest. That, you know, liberty can only be preserved if people are willing to work for it and labor hard for it. If you let it slip and you let the tyrants get into power, look out. They're going to take away every single liberty that was granted to us through our founding fathers. And that's why we at Institute on the Constitution are so passionate about teaching the founding documents to Americans, because most Americans don't understand and grasp the realities here. And they've been lied to successfully by the public, I should call it the miseducation system, as well as the propaganda system of the media and the politicians, and all of these forces have convinced them and lulled them into sleep, saying, you know, just sit back, it's all going to go on autopilot and our freedoms will be preserved. Not so. We need to understand the basis for our freedoms and our liberties in our founding documents, and we need to fight politically putting people into office, only who will uphold the original intent of the Constitution and the purposes of the Bill of Rights.
I agree with you totally, David, and our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And one of the most important things you can do as you begin to enter this battle for the survival of Western civilization is to understand the foundations of our freedom. These documents, which once made America the envy of the entire world, these documents which separated us from all other nations and allowed the American people to be free and to prosper. But of course, these are not taught in our schools. They're not talked about by Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and the other establishment shells. It's time we begin to educate the American people about what freedom is really all about. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney. David, pick up the story from there.
Yes, so we've talked about the essential nature of the Second Amendment, and people need to understand that, and they need to loudly and vocally speak to their elected representatives to insist that they defend the Second Amendment and insist that they allow no piece of legislation to pass that would violate the Second Amendment. Well, the Third Amendment is often quickly run over because it's something that we don't even mentally contemplate could happen. It refers to the quartering of troops in your own home. No soldier, it says, in the time of peace, shall be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in manner to be prescribed by law. So we have no idea of what was taking place there leading up to the war for independence, that American citizens in the colonies were being forced to house soldiers in their own home. And first of all, of course, this is a great inconvenience to the family, but more than an inconvenience to the family, and more than taking the food from their cupboards and so forth, it was a direct challenge against the headship of the father of the household. And in many instances of what took place prior to the war for independence is that rape of the women, both the wife as well as the daughters in those homes where British soldiers were quartered, took place. So there's a complete destruction taking place of the families during that period of time. And so our founding fathers wanted never to see this happen again. They knew what a tremendous evil quartering troops in people's homes was, and so they refused to allow the newly formed government to have a right to do that. This was a defense, again, against an all-powerful government intruding itself into the homes and into the lives of individuals. The Fourth Amendment is one that we should be very aware of today as being violated, and Dr. Stan, I know you've talked about it in other programs, has been tremendously destroyed by the Patriot Act. The Fourth Amendment protects us as citizens from unreasonable search and seizure. It says the rights of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by an oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Important to notice here, it protects us against invasions of privacy, and that if there is to be a search of our personal effects or of our house or even of our person, it can only be done so if it's accompanied by a warrant. That is a legal document that is supported by a probable cause, that is an indication of probable cause that you have committed a crime, that has to be presented before a magistrate who is neutral and detached, and an affidavit has to be set forth as to what the probable cause is that warrants them to either invade your house, to search your house, or your papers, or your personal self. So the key word there is unreasonable, because it doesn't protect against all searches and seizures, only against those unreasonable ones, and if there is to be a search or seizure, it must be accompanied by a warrant. Now, the Patriot Act has completely vitiated this Fourth Amendment altogether. And under the Patriot Act, the federal government currently has the right, they have granted themselves the power to search your house without your knowledge, without your, so you're away for an evening. They can break into your house. They've given themselves this permission to break into your house.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. We've covered, of course, the Second Amendment, which was to give the people the right to keep and bear arms to defend themselves against the excesses of government. And, of course, the Third Amendment, we've touched on the Fourth Amendment, however, the fact that the government cannot come in and search your home without a search warrant. And, of course, David is pointing out how the Patriot Act, which has not one word in it about Islamic terrorism, not one mention of Islamic terrorism. They've redefined terrorism, and they're using this simply as a vehicle of expanding the police powers of the federal government over the lives of the people, which was the one thing that our founding fathers feared. The Patriot Act has allowed them to come in and search your home without your knowledge or without your consent or without your knowledge and take things. You look around your house and things are gone. Why, of course, has the government been in taking things? You see, this would never be used against the common citizens. Yes, it would be, ladies and gentlemen, because if you were thought to be a criminal, there's not one word in that that says you have to be a terrorist. This is the frightening thing that they wanted to have this power. Government always wants more power. The history of civilization is that struggle between people who would be free and the tyrants who would rule over them. So pick up the story from there.
And so, as we mentioned, not only can they break in to your home without a warrant, they can place a bug in your home to listen to or a camera in your home to spy on you, as well as, of course, monitoring all your telephone conversations. They can listen without a warrant. They can listen to your cell phone, look at your email without a warrant, open your snail mail without a warrant. All of these things they have given themselves permission to do. And Americans should be outraged. They should be crying out to their representatives, do away with the Patriot Act. It's unconstitutional. You've violated my Fourth Amendment rights by passing such an evil bill.
And, of course, the thing is that they've sold this to the American people. It's all about the wicked Islamic terrorists, and it is not about Islamic terrorism. There's not one mention of Islamic terrorism there, and this has been used far more times against people who they thought were criminals, and they were going to get them, and they wanted this right to get them. And, of course, government's not there. It's there to enforce the laws, not to get people it doesn't like. And if you don't think they set up sting operations on people they don't like, or even sometimes suicide people they don't like our good friend Gary Webb, who died earlier this week, suicide with multiple gun wounds, shots to his head. I wonder how many people shoot themselves several times committing suicide.
Just unconscionable what was done. From what I understand, not one congressman read the Patriot Act before they signed off on it. Of course, they were under anthrax threat, and they were all running scared themselves. But they signed off on this bill without ever reading it. It's unconscionable what they did. And of course, our current president has wanted to and called for the strengthening of the Patriot Act. Let's add more to it. Let's add more power. The opposite of what should happen. It should be completely canned. When our government recognized a number of years ago that police, if they broke into somebody's home without a warrant and seized evidence and so forth, that this was a violation of the Fourth Amendment and therefore could not be used in a court of law. It had to be excluded from a court of law. And that applied not only to evidence seized, but they thought it necessary, therefore, to be sure that the police respect the Fourth Amendment, so they set up very clear rules in court of law as to what was acceptable evidence and what was unacceptable evidence. And this whole Fourth Amendment is designed to limit government's authority to invade an individual citizen's, their person, their property, without probable cause. That is, there has to be evidence on the part of the government that you have committed a crime before they can act against you to search and to seize anything that's in your possession, or even look at your own papers. So there's an expectation, where there's a reasonable expectation of privacy, then you cannot be searched without a warrant. But if you have left some things in the open, suppose, for example, on the dashboard of your car, you left drug paraphernalia and illegal drugs on the dashboard of your car, and a policeman walking by saw that, then obviously you do not have an expectation of privacy there because it's in plain view. But something inside your house, something inside a place where it cannot be readily seen, then again, they cannot invade that privacy and stop or frisk you without a justifiable cause, that there's a probable cause you've committed a crime. And we ought to speak with our representatives all over this country and demand that they immediately put to death this Patriot Act, because it is a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. And if people would do this and put their representatives on notice, they are going to personally hold them accountable at the ballot box, that if they refuse to kill this destruction of the Fourth Amendment, that they are going to personally work against them to remove them from office.
Okay, we'll be right back in here in a moment.
Listen to us.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. And go ahead and pick up the story there, David.
So we move from the Second Amendment, where we have a personal right to defend ourselves from tyrannical government, to the Fourth Amendment, where we have a right that the police powers of the government cannot invade us without probable cause, to the Fifth Amendment, that if we have been arrested, that is, there is some charge brought against us for having committed a crime, and therefore we are facing a trial, there are certain protections that we have as well as a citizen who is charged with a crime, because in our system of justice, you are innocent until proven guilty. That's the way it's supposed to be. We all know with things like the IRS, they do not follow that at all. You're guilty until proven innocent. Again, a complete violation of our Bill of Rights. Well, the Fifth Amendment includes this grand jury aspect that if you were to be indicted for capital or other infamous crimes, you must have a grand jury look at the evidence that the government has against you or claims to have against you, and that grand jury is to determine if the case of the government is such that they have a valid and legitimate case. And these are just citizens. This is, you know, just your average citizens gathered together as a grand jury and charged with looking at the evidence against you to determine if there is enough evidence that you will be subject to a trial.
But, you know, even the powers, the fascist powers, have even already eroded that concept. Mm-hmm. In fact, I heard Tom DeLay recently say that, you know, you can indict a ham sandwich if you want to. I mean, grand jury indictments are so easy to get, they totally undercut what the original meaning of this was. Mm-hmm. It was to protect the people against the excesses of government. That's why you had to have a grand jury intervene there. But unfortunately, they perverted this, and you probably heard that phrase, you know, they can indict a ham sandwich. That means that they can indict anybody they want to, and it was never meant to be that. Our Constitution was established to restrict the power of the government so people could be free, because there was always a fear that people who had positions of power would misuse that power, would go after their enemies, would attack their enemies, would do anything they could, and if they thought somebody was guilty, they would circumvent the law to get them. And you can't have a society like that. You have to have a society built upon right and wrong and morality. And far better that 20 guilty men go free than one innocent man be put in prison. And yet it's happening in America almost every day.
And part of the problem, Dr. Stan, is people who serve on jury, grand jury or petit jury, often don't understand their role. And, of course, the government is aiding and abetting that by not giving them proper information. One of our goals...
Hold that thought right there. And this is Dr. Stan, and Pastor David Whitney was saying that the government is violating the Constitution every day, and one of the primary purposes of the Institute of the Constitution is...
to exactly train people for understanding our Constitution, so understanding how the government violates that. In the next year, 2005, we're going to be developing a course on jury duty. Many people dread the idea of jury duty. They should not. They should view it as a high privilege, the most powerful role they can have as a citizen. So we're going to be developing a course that will train people in effectively functioning on both a grand jury and a petit jury according to the design of our founding fathers. That, of course, in addition to our regular course, Institute on the Constitution, that trains people in the founding documents, the Christian history and heritage of our nation. And people can get the host kit, which is 12 lectures. with a detailed notebook of an outline of each of those lectures, and a system set up so that with question and answers, with review questions, that a host without any history or training as a lawyer can effectively help people understand our founding documents, what our founding fathers' vision for our government was, and how to take our nation back. And they can get a hold of our host kit by calling us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or they can actually order on the web if they go to our website at iotconline.com.
That's Institute on the Constitution Online, IOTC, right?
iotconline.com. Well, the grand jury, which we were talking about here in the Fifth Amendment, is designed to be a buffer between the citizen and the state. Its purpose was that nobody should have to go through the expense, the trauma, and the jeopardy of a trial unless grand jury of common citizens determines there is probable cause. So they were to serve as a fact-finding body and a check upon the power, the police powers of a government. And by the way, in this same phrase, the Fifth Amendment clearly recognizes capital punishment. In the phrasing used there, that no one is to be put in jeopardy of life or limb. In other words, capital punishment is called for by the Fifth Amendment for some crimes, and therefore the modern interpretation that the Supreme Court and other state courts have come up with is completely contrary to our founding fathers, that the capital punishment is somehow unconstitutional because it's cruel and unusual punishment. Not at all, according to our founding fathers, and the proof is right there in the Fifth Amendment. I just mentioned double jeopardy. It's the idea that you cannot be tried twice by the same jurisdiction for the same offense, and this was designed to prevent government harassment because the people before the War for Independence experienced this repeatedly, as the King of England would try, and if they weren't convicted, he would try again and try again and try again until he finally found a jury that would convict somebody of the crime that they hadn't committed. And they said, we are going to protect our citizens from this kind of overreaching power, and that double jeopardy is not permitted in our system. And you mentioned that we unfortunately have this being violated on an ongoing basis, as the government will try you on one level, and then they'll go, if they didn't get you on the state level, they'll try to get you on a federal level, or if they can't get you on an IRS conviction, then they'll try you in another federal court. Just a violation of this basic principle incorporated in the Fifth Amendment.
And of course, what they'll do is they'll try you in a state court, then they'll try in a federal court. And if they don't like what the state court does, they'll come back again, and they'll just wipe you out financially. Mm-hmm. If they're going to get you, they're going to get you. That was not the purpose of government.
No.
The purpose of government was not to get people. It was to enforce the law and to be fair and moral. Well, of course, do you think a government that's torturing people at Guantanamo Bay, a government, of course, that condoned what went on at Abu Ghraib, they're not going to tell you that. But this was not just at Abu Ghraib. It was a number of prisons over there and in Afghanistan as well. And eight people have died now. They admit eight people died in Afghanistan while under American detention. Of course, they don't mention the hundreds of Afghans died. They were the Taliban that died with our good friends at Northern Alliance, who we financed and backed, put these people in airtight containers and simply smothered them to death. Hundreds of them died. And we were responsible because we were financing that sort of thing. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And the American government is over slaughtering people in Iraq. Over 100,000 Iraqis have died, and you can go up on the internet, Google, type in Iraqi casualties, 100,000. You'll find article after article after article about it. We never talk about that here in America. We never talk about the 20,000 American casualties. I saw the wonderful article the other day. It said over 10,000 American casualties in addition to the 1,000 injured. That's right, over 10,000. Actually, the figure is 20,000, but they were telling the truth. It was over 10,000. So they consistently lying to us on so many things. And that is not only the casualties, it's the other people who have other diseases over there. Strange diseases, very reminiscent of the Gulf War illness. Another 10,000 at least are totally disabled by these other diseases. that they don't want to talk about. So pick up the story there, David.
Now, when most people think of the Fifth Amendment, they think of pleading the Fifth. Well, when a person refers to pleading the Fifth, it is the no compulsory self-incrimination clause in the Fifth Amendment, that you cannot be compelled to incriminate yourself. The recognition here is that if there's permission on the part of the government to force you to confess something, well, what will they do? Well, they'll do what they did there in Abu Ghraib. They'll torture you to a point that you'll confess anything simply to stop the torture. And the history of Europe is replete with the Inquisition and many other governments torturing their people to the point where the people confess whatever the government claims that they are criminally guilty of, which obviously you don't have honest confessions. And so no compulsory self-incrimination is permitted in our system by our founding fathers. They recognize also that coerced confessions violates a biblical principle, and the biblical principle is that you are violating human dignity by forcing a person to cooperate in his own self-destruction. And that was not to be permitted at all in a just system of law. Now, the courts have recently ruled that custodial interrogation is inherently coercive. That is, if you have a group of police or even one or two policemen in a room trying to coerce you, and you see this on television shows, police television shows all the time, and, you know, they always get the truth out of the person eventually. Well, the courts recognize that it's inherently coercive if they have taken you into custody. Therefore, they develop what are called the Miranda rights, that the police must read to you your rights to ensure that you understand by participating in their interrogation without an attorney that you are waiving your Fifth Amendment rights and that you are voluntarily waiving those Fifth Amendment rights before you respond at all in those interrogations. So no compulsory self-incrimination is what most people think of when they hear pleading the Fifth. But two other very critically important aspects of what the Fifth Amendment says is that no person can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That means without a just procedure that ensures fundamental fairness. Now consider what our current government does. Do we defend every person from being deprived of life without due process of law? Not at all. What, 42, 40 million, 44 million? I'm not sure the total number because nobody's absolutely certain, but they know it's over 40 million unborn children have been deprived of life without due process of law. And as a candidate for President of the United States, Michael Peruca said, if the president wanted to stop abortion, he could stop it immediately.
With an executive order.
An executive order that says the personhood of the child begins at conception. Therefore, the Fifth Amendment applies to the unborn child, and every unborn child that is murdered by abortion has to be prosecuted. And the Fifth Amendment covers that because they cannot be deprived of life without due process of law. No unborn child is put on trial before he is murdered in his mother's womb, and every abortion should be tried as a murder on the part of a contract killer called an abortionist who does the bidding of the woman. Now, the other aspect of this cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And the idea is that government cannot take private property for whatever it chooses to take that private property for. And so that there is to be, if there is to be a public use for some private property, such as a road is to be built or something that's going to function to serve the whole community, then the government can only take that private property with just compensation, meaning that they pay the fair market value for that piece of property. And this is being violated today on an enormous basis across our land. People's property is being taken by the government, and they're not given just compensation for it, because once the government even threatens the idea of taking the property, the value of the property falls to a very low level, and the person, if they do agree, they walk away with nearly far less than what the property is actually worth. In addition to that, if government doesn't officially take title to your property, but it limits what you can do with your property, such as limiting what you can build through zoning or other regulations, and limiting what business you can conduct on your property, saying you, you can't run a repair shop on your property. We tell you that it's zoned this way and you can't do this or that or the other. Hasn't the government basically taken your property when they tell you what you can do and what you can't do on your property? See, our founding fathers, when they declared independence from England, they declared independence also from a land system that was essentially a feudal system. That is, the king basically owned the territory that the colonies resided upon. And it was by the king's permission that they had the privilege of using the king's land. That is, if they paid taxes on the land and they did what he told them they could do and could not do. In other words, the king was the one who told them what they could do on his property because it was his property. It was a feudal system of land ownership, basically, in the colonies prior to the Declaration of Independence. But when they declared independence, they declared that that feudal system was no longer valid. The king no longer was the feudal lord over the property that was the 13 colonies. And now, everyone who held deed to their property held it, as the term is, allodially. And the allodial is harking back to the Greek term, but from God. Literally, the word allodial means but from God. That is, I don't hold my property from the king by his permission as a serf of the king, and therefore he is my lord and I have to pay him all sorts of dues. Instead, I hold my property but from God. The idea here is that the individual who owns a piece of property owns that piece of property free and clear. That is, if they don't owe the bank some mortgage or whatever, if they own that property free and clear, it is their property. They are the Lord sovereign of that property. Therefore, no government can tell them what they can do with their property or what they can't do with their property. Or no government can come along and say, well, we've zoned this, and therefore you can't practice this business on your property. You can't build this kind of structure on your property. You can't do whatever we determine you can't do is what you can't do with your property. Furthermore, the founding fathers believed that no property tax was valid, because if property tax was permitted, basically you're saying the person who taxes you owns that property. You're paying rent to a feudal lord who ultimately owns the property. And if you want to make a test of how this works in America today, just don't pay your property tax for a few months and find out very quickly who claims to own your property. If your property is paid off free and clear and you don't pay property tax, a few months later you get a notice, and before you know it, your property is being auctioned off by the entity that claims ownership to your property, the county. The county claims to be the lord, and you are the serf now in our current system of property ownership here in America. We've rejected what our founding fathers clearly said, that you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And unfortunately, this aspect of the Fifth Amendment is dead, because most Americans have accepted zoning, most Americans have accepted property taxes, most Americans have accepted the ridiculous ideas of the wacko environmentalists that say, oh, you know, you got an insect on your property that is endangered, and therefore we're going to tell you what you can and can't do and where you can build and where you can't build. These sort of things are taking place all over America today, and Americans should be outraged, Dr. Stan. They should be up in arms and saying, we refuse this. The Fifth Amendment protects us from this sort of thing, and we're going to overturn any of the evil practices that our government has done to deprive us of life, liberty, and property without due process of law.
Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling. Hi, Ray. Where are you calling from?
Santa Cruz.
Okay, do you have a question?
Good evening, Ray. Yeah, I just want, what could be done to prevent Gonzalez from becoming the head of the Justice Department? The man is totally evil.
All right, fine. Well, of course, that's a little off the subject, but I would agree with you. The only thing that we could do is try to raise an awareness of this man's history, his background. You know, the tragedy is that there's so many people who support President Bush, and no matter what he does, he could do no wrong. And yet, here's a man, of course, who was gone right along with the Patriot Act, a man who is authorized
to
torture.
Yeah, he helped write the Patriot Act, really.
Right. And so, I mean, I think if you look, I mean, I don't know why any Christian would want to back him, because when he was on the courts there in Texas, whether you're against the life issue, uh-huh. he was very definitely against the pro-life issues. So he is not a, you know, the sort of man that I would want as the Attorney General.
Yeah.
So, but all we can do, Ray, is to raise an awareness among the people that they've been lied to by the media and that the president is making very, very poor choices for a man who professes to be a Christian.
You watch. They're going to use the minority thing with Gonzalez. They're going to say, oh, we can't do anything. We can't say anything about him. He's a minority, you know, so you can't say anything about him.
No, well, let's get David's thought. What are your thoughts, David?
Well, I think you're exactly right. And unfortunately, most Americans are unwilling to step to the plate and call their representative and say, hey, I want you to make a stink there in Washington, D.C. in the confirmation process of this man. I want you to point these things out. If enough people were to do that, And it doesn't take as many people as you might think. That oftentimes, if a congressman hears from 100 or 200 of people he's representing, his response is, every one of my constituents is saying, you know, whatever that group of 200 is saying. So if there were enough Americans who were up in arms and willing to communicate clearly, and oftentimes the best way to communicate is by phone or by letter, to be sure that they have heard, and be sure that you insist on a response from them, that they write you back with their point of view, what their decision is on that. Yeah.
David, isn't they confirmed by the Senate, so wouldn't it... basically, you go ahead and write to Diane or call Diane Feinstein and call Barbara
like
Boxer.
That woman.
I don't like her either, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't call her on this issue.
Yeah,
but get other people to do it, Ray. Don't do it alone.
Okay,
I share your concern. We should all be frightened to death.
Right.
And the question is, why is President Bush appointing, of all people, Alberto Gonzalez?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're back for the last segment of our program. Roger, do you have a quick question? We're just about out of time.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. I had thought that property taxes, albeit far lower ones at the county level now, were probably constitutional and otherwise legitimate. And so I'm asking, and also that would be the property qualification for the vote as well. So what would you suggest as maybe one or two alternate legitimate sources of revenue at the county level then?
Certainly at the county level there's fees that, you know, we face plenty of those, but there's taxes that could be on exchanges of property, and there's many of those that take place. But you look at what most counties are spending the majority of their money on that they receive in revenue, you know what that is?
Planning.
Education is what the vast majority of the tax dollars raised through property taxes spent on, and the great cry is, oh, well, you know, if we got rid of property tax, we couldn't fund police and we couldn't fund all these other functions of government. The reality is those could be functioning on a far less income stream than they're currently gaining through property tax. So they've locked these two things together, the public miseducation system with property tax, and it's going to take a huge revolution to take place for Americans to wake up to that reality and wake up that they've been ripped off by the education system, and that if we can unlock the property tax issue, and it's going to take some work to do that, but the first level, of course, is educating people across our country about the very issue of the Fifth Amendment here as it relates to that.
Okay, anything else, Roger?
Maybe you could expand on a show or two on that. God bless you all.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. David, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening? And get out your telephone number and your address one more time so people know how to reach you.
People can reach us toll-free, 866-730-9796.
One more time, slowly.
866-730-9796. And our website is iotconline.com. Thomas Jefferson said, "The God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time, and can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed the only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with his wrath." Thomas Jefferson's words are true today, and we need to educate ourselves and then educate our churches and educate people in our community such that we can return to this constitutional republic that was bequeathed to us by our founding fathers. The first action and the first level that every American needs to be involved with is educating themselves and their family and friends and fellow church members.
God bless you. Thank you so much, very much for being with us, David. We'll look forward to having you again next month.
All right, great.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I think that what David has been saying is so vitally important, and you have to understand that the foundation of our freedom was based upon this concept that our freedom, and like any other country in the world, our freedom came from God. And we were to limit the power of the government because power would be misused. Now, there are a lot of people out there who really believe in government. A lot of, we call them liberals. A lot of liberals are really very good people. They're really idealistic. But they do not understand that government is a two-edged sword. On one side, they say we do good. On the other side, of course, they take away people's freedom. They take and send our boys off to war. They contrive justifications for going to war. They have to, of course, to maintain their power, destroy their enemies. They have many times they will use various techniques. We saw the fellow who's running for office over in the Ukraine. Could you imagine one of the two candidates was poisoned? Somebody poisoned that fellow? Could that sort of thing really going on in America? Ladies and gentlemen, I know my good friend Ed Deckler has been poisoned a couple of times. Why? Because he's speaking out against the power structure that controls America. And I can think of at least three people I've interviewed on my programs and not too distant past who have all been killed. I believe that they were all murdered. I've talked to three separate CIA assassins on my programs, L.D. Brown, a man named Colonel Marvin. He was recruited to be an assassin to kill somebody here in America. Chip Tatum. Chip has since disappeared, but we still have our interviews with him. They were all recruited by the CIA to carry out assassinations here in this country. And those of you who doubt that this goes on, I suggest the book entitled Fixing Intelligence by General William Odom, where he asked the question. He doesn't tell you what's going on. He just asked the question, should the CIA be carrying out assassinations? Ladies and gentlemen, government is something to be feared. Government is like fire. It's a dangerous servant. But it's a fearful master, and so help us to get the truth out. First of all, you need to understand the Christian foundations of America. We have a wonderful book by Tim LaHaye, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers. America's God and Country by William Federer. Give you the background of the men who created this country. Abandonment Theology by John Chalfont. So that's America's God and Country by William Federer, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers. And then, of course, the book that we were just mentioning, Abandonment Theology. And then, of course, we have a number of other books. We have The Original Intent by David Barton, a great, great book. We have a book on the First Amendment, The Wall of Separation. There's so much information that's available, and you need to have this information at your fingertips so you can discuss these issues well. Now, you can go ahead and get the Institute of the Constitution. It comes with 12 videos, or actually 12 one-hour programs. I think there are three or four videos there. Then a couple of other videos by David Barton. And then there's a workbook that will actually take you through step-by-step what you're going to learn in these 12 lectures. And then, of course, how you can get this information out to others. And we do hope that many of you out there will seriously consider the problems we're raising here. And you will join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, you can also go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And there you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, 5 hours a day. You will find where you can listen to us on satellite, 4 hours a day on shortwave, and we encourage you to tell others about our shortwave and Internet programs. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because if the people of this country don't turn back to God, why, we're going to lose America. There's no question There's no instance in all history where a nation is turned away from God, where God has not turned on that nation. And finally, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so to our listeners up in the great Northwest, we'll be saying good night. And to the rest, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations that you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, tonight we have one of my favorite guests, and I know he's one of your favorite guests, too. And that's Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Joel, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. Nice to be with you again.
Well,
it's been a while.
Well, we missed you last week, but this is the holiday season, and I know you have many demands on your time. But anyway, we're so glad to have you with us tonight. Are we going to talk about your year-end predictions, or what are we going to cover?
Well, we can do that. It's been a major piece that's gotten wide circulation on the web. Every year I do an update on my... Well, it's a major analysis piece on my website, worldaffairsbrief.com, called Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade. I started that in the year 2000, projecting what I thought the major threats that we would face between there and 2010, focusing on World War III as an ultimate threat that would come down the line in response to American continued antagonism around the world. So every year in the late fall and as late as December, I put out an update of that called the Big Picture. I analyze the news every week for people, but I want them to sit back and take a look at the big picture about where we stand vis-a-vis the major threats like war and what's involved with terrorism. And that's what I just put out the week before last, and as I say, it even got on Renz.com. Jeff Renz interviews me fairly often, and he does post things from my World Affairs Brief, and that's one of the things that got on his news site just recently.
Well, I think that all we have to do is look and see how we're doing everything we can to inflame the Islamic world against the United States. I mean, why would they have ever released those pictures to the news media from Abu Ghraib prison? Those were not something that was, you know, would readily have been circulated. The federal government allowed that to be put out. The federal government is bringing out so many things that are aimed at inflaming the Arab world against the American people. The attack on Fallujah, you know. just the total destruction of that town. And I heard Seymour Hersh the other evening in an interview, and he said, you know, our justification for going into Iraq was, well, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. When that proved to be false, why, we said, well, he's a terrible man, and he's actually killing his people and torturing his citizens. So we got rid of him, and now we're killing his citizens and torturing the people there. So, you know, and although it's sort of a sick joke, this is actually what's going on today. And there's no question at all that we have total chaos there. At least under Saddam Hussein, they had electricity and water and sewage, and many parts of Iraq, these things are not working very well. They may be working down in the Shia area in the south, but they're certainly not working up in the Sunni area in the north.
Well, that's right. I did take a look at some of the general remarks I made in my big picture edition 2 weeks ago. Was that, you know, relative to the war on terrorism, I am convinced that our own nation does engage in using agent provocateurs to incite terrorism, to allow it to happen, to justify, you know, the Patriot Act and this terrible new intelligence reform bill, which has turned into Patriot 2 once we start reading the fine print. It's just incredible. But one of the things I did point out to my listeners, I said, you know, your chances, even if terrorism were real, your chances are very slight of ever being injured by a terrorist attack in the United States.
Hold that thought. All right, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and of course Joel is saying, you know, even if terrorism is real, even if Osama bin Laden is alive and well, and I'm not really sure that he is at all, after reading his last last missile sent in just 3 days before the election, there were so many things in that that made me feel that this was actually written by somebody in the CIA. And after all, they said it's real, so the CIA were the ones who validated it. You know, but even if there really is an Osama bin Laden, he still is alive out there. Why, the chances of the average American ever being hurt or damaged by terrorism in the United States is pretty slim. So pick up the story there, Joel.
But my main point was that the major threat to your well-being is our government's reaction to terrorism. I mean, the World Trade Center, as bad as that was, killed 3,000 people. In retrospect, you know, we kill 40,000 at least on the highways each year, and we kill almost anywhere from 150,000 to 200,000 through misdiagnosis of medicines and procedures by the establishment hospital system.
Don't forget the Vioxx now. They're suggesting that somewhere between 88,000 and 139,000 people will die because of the heart disease and strokes produced by Vioxx, which the FDA knew, of course, had an increased heart and stroke risk and did nothing about it. But so, you know, you're absolutely right. 3 million people, it's a tragedy. 139,000, that's a statistic.
Well, the important thing is, though, that your chances of getting to be affected, especially financially, even in a devastating way, by terrorism is very small, but the reaction to government has a great effect on you. If you were involved in the airline industry and got shut down for 2 weeks, it almost destroyed that entire industry, and it really wasn't necessary. All they would have had to do was land airplanes, rescreen the passengers, and send them back on their merry way. But they didn't do that. You know, they shut it down for an interminable amount of time. They shut freeways down. They halt traffic. And now, of course, they're engaging in these kinds of very intrusive pat-downs and strip searches of people. And sure enough, as I predicted in my World Affairs brief, the Transportation Security Administration, what a misnomer. Anyway, Transportation Security Administration is now recommending that if you want to avoid these strip searches and pat-downs, we recommend that you get on our special pre-screened list where you submit yourself to background checks and give biometric indicators, everything they've wanted in a national ID system, and then you won't have to go through these things. So it's almost like a wag-the-dog type of scenario. You create an intolerable situation, and for people who have to travel regularly...
Hold that thought right there. All right, our guest is Joel Skousen. He's just pointing out that certainly when you go into the airport, where you're going to be patted down and wanted and searched and humiliated, but they have an alternative. If you'll simply give them your biometric indicators and all the things that they want on you so that they can really have you into a computer system and every detail about you, then you won't have to be humiliated. So they create the problem. And then, of course, they have a solution, which is exactly what they wanted all the time. Why don't you pick it up from there?
So I think we're going to see more of this. It's a very insidious plan. Obviously, the people who are involved in implementing these policies don't understand who's driving these policies. Although we find at Reagan Airport, one of the most egregious things is that, just as vice squads and police tend to get corrupted by the vice that they investigate, so transportation and security people, being a very boring job, start having all kinds of sexual predilections and things and imaginations going off. And then they started picking out voluptuous women and remotely pressing the button so the alarm would go off, subjecting them to a private strip search, and they'd take them into a room where they had cameras on them. They would sit around these screens and laugh and joke about people's anatomy and this is just a heinous crime to be done. In reaction, several airports of modest size have decided to dump the TSA personnel. They've petitioned the government to say, we want to go back to private screeners. We don't want the lowlife that you're hiring in the federal realm screening our passengers. And they aren't doing us any good. They're less efficient. Reno Airport, for example, was saying, or one of the small airports there in Nevada was saying, they have 11 full-time people there sitting around most of the day because they have, just a few dozen flights. I think it was Elko, Nevada, has a few dozen, five or six flights a day. And they have 11 full-time TSA personnel just sitting around waiting for those flights to arrive. And, of course, ultimately that's being collected in airport user fees. Certain governments are starting to wise up and say, we want out of this system.
Okay, well, I certainly agree with that totally. And this whole thing is a scam to give you the perception we're trying to stop terrorism. There's a terrorist threat out there. And I think that whatever terrorist the threat is, we're doing everything we can to antagonize it, to inflame the Arabs all throughout the world against America by our policies. We've lost all the goodwill that we had after 9/11. We certainly no longer have the moral high ground.
Absolutely.
Okay. Pick it up from there.
Well, let's move to the story of the embarrassing situation of President Bush recommending with high ubiquitous words Bernard Kerik to be head of Homeland Security. As I pointed out in my World Affairs brief, this is a job that nobody really wants. After seeing how Tom Ridge became the second most hated man in America after John Ashcroft as Attorney General, and both of these people are bailing out before their reputations get any further tarnished by the shenanigans they're having to deal with. This is a job that nobody wanted. It was apparently offered to Rudy Giuliani, and he said, no, I don't want that. He's got presidential ambitions. The worst thing he wants to do is be a hated man in America because of all the security things that TSA is doing. So he puts in his sidekick, former police commissioner from New York, one of the most corrupt men possible, who's been hired by Rudy Giuliani after he got back from a stint as the Baghdad cop, 14 months spent over there essentially shaking down the place, bailed out of that and came back to work for Rudy Giuliani, and then he submits his name to the White House. This guy turns out to be a dark side thug. This guy's been shaking down people and involved in corruption, immorality, multiple affairs, one with his publisher and the other with a corrections officer. I mean, this stuff is the kind of things you get supposedly thrown out on your ear if you get caught doing these kinds of things with people under your control. And yet this man has prospered under this, and he's apparently had a great deal of immunity. But now that this is all blown up in his face, Rudy Giuliani looks really bad with the White House. All of a sudden, Bush has egg on his face for having put out and recommended to the United States a thug, and of course he didn't know Kerik from anyone in the world, But this was not just Rudy Giuliani. There was an entire media push for this guy. Wall Street Journal published articles by Bernard Kerik. The New York Post did. New York Times had articles by this guy was supposed to be an expert. He was being groomed for higher things, and he turned out to be just a thug. Every one of those articles was ghostwritten by other people. Doesn't have any talent of writing. The number of scandals is just coming out like reading like some red page out of a whore's closet. It's incredible what this guy has done, and Bush legitimately should have egg on his face.
Okay, certainly we're not getting that out of the regular media. And it was just, we're told, well, the only reason, of course, that he was forced to drop out was because he had hired a nanny for a short period of time, an illegal nanny. Maybe he hadn't paid the Social Security taxes on it.
Well, of course, even that's looking more like it was something they had to drum up in order to give him an excuse to bail out because... he isn't even admitting that he actually even hired someone. He said, I may have hired a nanny at some point. Well, did you or didn't you hire a nanny? I mean, that should be a very, easy thing to admit to, other than the fact that it's illegal, and he may not want to admit to any illegalities. But, of course, the White House is saying, no one's accusing Kerik of doing anything illegal. They're not. Well, then what's all the hubbub about? We know that it's illegal to hire a nanny without paying the Social Security taxes. This obviously was done as a cover so that the real dirt doesn't really get any more air than it is. Now it's getting a lot of press in the alternative news media. New York Post, even the major media is getting its share now. And this is really reflecting very bad on Rudolph Giuliani. He has presidential ambitions. He runs this consultation firm, which basically advertises that I've got access to the White House. Well, that's really up for grabs now, whether or not he has much access anymore. I don't know if there are many people in the Bush administration who want to talk to him. David Birdsell, for example, professor of public policy at Baruch College, said he's hurt himself badly, speaking of Giuliani. After all, Bush based much of his successful campaign for re-election on the idea that he could keep terrorists at bay and America more safe than John Kerry. And now we see him sponsor Kerik, and it reflects badly on Bush's judgment. And that, in turn, reflects very badly on Rudolph Giuliani's judgment. Now, in reality, this is a criminal syndicate we're dealing with. We're dealing with Rudolph Giuliani, who, in essence, pretended to clean up New York City. He did get tough on certain things, but they also falsified a lot of statistics on crime. They're doing this nationwide. Atlanta, for example, has just been charged by the FBI with falsifying their FBI annual reports by as much as 30% in order to make it look like they're having success on crime. New York's doing the same thing. Now, they have really clamped down on the things which the tourists see so that it appears to be criminal, but you don't clean up crime in a society where drug use is increasing, where immorality is increasing. Who really believes that evil is increasing yet crime is not? It's more a shell game. Well, Kerik was in charge of that period under Giuliani to falsify those reports and to make the thing, look better than what it really was. He was running corruption scandals there. He was skimming profits out of a cigarette fund in the Corrections Institute when he was there. He had a $6 million windfall come from his stock options in Taser Corporation, which deals directly with Homeland Security. I mean, this just reeks to high heaven of insider dealing. It makes Hillary Clinton's $150,000 windfall off commodities trading look like a a pickle.
Well, of course, inflation. But anyway, go ahead.
I mean, this is a guy who had to declare bankruptcy. This is a guy who's had, written bad checks, and suddenly he's a $6 million millionaire and, keeping a couple of mistresses up in penthouse apartments around New York to rent. A lot of investigation going now to find out his Battery Park apartment was costing him about $4,000 a month. And this is a guy who's going to be in charge of Homeland Security. I tell you, this really does reflect badly on the Bush administration.
Well, I think that that's the reason that they did not want him to have to go through the investigational process and the questioning by the senators.
That's right. They certainly didn't want to, you know, they would have had to do a lot of pressure, a lot of leaning on congressmen and senators to not ask tough questions in order to get, you know, him through the process, and they just really had to bail them out on that. There's an awful lot of cover-ups going on now. It's very sad to learn about the death of Gary Webb.
And this is certainly sounds very, very strange. And for our listeners out there, Gary Webb had written a series of articles for the San Jose Mercury on the CIA and drug smuggling and the Contras. And, of course, it was because of him that they had the Inspector General investigation of the CIA. And there's no question the CIA is involved in drugs. Well, it cost Gary his job with the San Jose Mercury. He could not get it. He was a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He couldn't get a job anywhere in the country in the media. He went to work for the legislature up in Sacramento. And do you have any idea of what had happened? Was there problems with the family or what?
Well, you know, he was divorced and living alone, so it made it easy for him to get knocked off and make it appear like a suicide. But when the coroner says he dies of multiple wounds, plural, with an S, you have to wonder, you know, how does a person shoot himself more than one time in the head when you're trying to commit suicide?
Well, of course, you wonder why the coroner would say something like that, but I'm sure that we have some of the best coroners in this country that money could buy, or people that certainly want to keep their jobs. And
coroners are notorious for being controlled by the feds when they want to cover things up. They always make sure there are coroners in place that will falsify the results.
Well, that will be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Joel Skousen. And Joel, from World Affairs Brief, please pick up the story from there.
Well, let's move on to another scandal that's getting increasing proportions. You know about the U.N. oil for food scandal that's been under investigation that Kofi Annan's been involved in. It trails lead back to Jacques Chirac, president of France. They're now leading back to Bill Clinton and billionaire Mark Rich. Mark Rich has emerged now as a central figure in the U.N. oil for food scandal under investigation. And this comes from none other than the Washington Post. You know, Rich is the fugitive Swiss-based commodities trader, received a controversial pardon from President Bill Clinton just as he was leaving office. And apparently he's tied in with some of the leftists in Israel, Shimon Peres, and his Peace Institute. So the left in Israel is involved in this. I mean, there's just tons of people getting payoffs through this, including Bill Clinton, who got a huge payoff to a Swiss bank account for pardoning Mark Rich on this. So there's criminal wrongdoing involved in a lot of these things. There are oil companies involved here in the United States. Ben Polner, a New York-based oil trader of Taurus Oil, set up a series of companies in Liechtenstein and others that were used to put together the deals between Saddam and his international supporters. So this was a big operation involving the big money power, big oil companies. And there were lots of things that were laundered through France, Russia, and other countries, a lot of middlemen, a lot of non-end users who could then resell the oil on the open market and make profits up to 50 cents on a barrel.
My understanding, though, that there were also some American corporations were tied into this, too, weren't there?
Absolutely. That's right.
And that's why, of course, they didn't want to put the list out. Certainly we know that France and Russia and Kofi Annan and Son was there, but there were a lot of American corporations, and, boy, they sure cut that investigation off.
That's right. And in any case, you know, it even looks like Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton was the recipient of $1 million from Rich's jet-setting ex-wife Denise, which came from this oil for food fund. So the Clintons, for pardoning, you know, Rich actually got probably several different types of payoffs, campaign contributions as well as money into his Swiss bank account.
I understood he also got a large donation for the presidential library, too.
That's right. Yeah, there were some major donors from countries, including Arab countries and oil countries. The list just goes on and on. It's getting worse and worse. That's one of the reasons why I think all of a sudden the U.S. turned around, was initially not supporting Kofi Annan, was calling for his resignation, and then all of a sudden the Bush administration, through UN Ambassador John Danforth, cover-up artist of the Waco massacre, by the way, suddenly turned pale and said, we support Kofi Annan. I think Kofi Annan decided, I'm going to blow the whistle on all you boys if you take me down. So everyone's falling into line.
Well, of course, remember that Ron Brown said something similar to that to Bill Clinton shortly before Ron Brown's plane accident. Right now we've got Arlene calling here from Santa Cruz. So, Arlene, did you have a quick question?
Well, I don't have a question. I would just like to comment that in...
Hold that thought for just a minute. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. We have Arlene, who is calling in from Santa Cruz. You had a comment you wanted to make?
Well, yes, regarding the Webb incident and this repression of news from journalists. There's quite an article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel by William Sapphire of the New York Times calling judges as plumbers. And he says this trend toward the jailing of journalists for protecting the free flow of news is an abuse of power abomination. If higher courts can't control the plumbing fashionable below, it's up to Congress to enact a federal shield law. He also says the founders ensured freedom of the Fourth Estate as a check against the powers of all three branches of central government. Most states are not doing their part.
All right. Thank you so much, Arlene. I share your concern. The one thing, though, with this whole issue is what they're doing is focusing all the attention on the reporters and their sources without saying, where did the sources get that information as a means of punishing the people who were telling the truth about the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that Saddam was not trying to buy uranium. What they've done so effectively with this whole issue you're talking about is to deflect our attention from what the real issue would be. Joel, how would you respond to that?
Well, you know, I don't trust the Fourth Estate of the establishment press. Let me give you a couple of examples here. Right now, Cliff Kincaid of Accuracy in Media has been decrying the fact that there have been that Dan Rather and USA Today, well, Dan Rather in particular, resigned over this major controversy over the Bush guard records that turned out to be, you know, a forgery. And he was saying, why doesn't the chairman of USA Today resign as well? Because he published the same information. He's issued no apology either. But you see, this isn't the issue. The issue is, the person who actually wrote the memo said, the information is true. It was just a forged copy of my memo. Now, this is what's interesting, is that the media actually designed a forgery in order to discredit a true memo, so that the issue would no longer be that there was evidence that Bush falsified his guard record, but that the report that he did so was based on a forgery. They failed to repeat the fact that the forgery was based on truth. Now, isn't that an interesting way of tricking the American people twice in order to get the wrong conclusion?
They are masters of deceit, really. Arlene, I share your concern that we've got a lot of real trouble with the media, but it's the people who really control the media who are manipulating our reality, and they know exactly how to come up with forged documents to conceal the truth. I always felt that was this whole thing was probably staged by the Republican establishment to make George Bush look
good. But then how do you feel about the fact that There are a couple of Chronicle reporters right now that will be threatened with jail for contempt unless they reveal who provided the transcripts of the grand jury testimony, which the paper had the First Amendment right and journalistic obligation to print.
All right.
I cannot imagine the newspaper burning its source.
Oh, but see, what they're doing is they're focusing on the wrong issue. I mean, what was the real issue that was at stake here? How would you reply to that, Joel?
Well, I just don't think that these things are going to turn out against the journalists. They're not going to, the courts really ultimately aren't going to rule against them in this regard. If anything, this will be used as an excuse to erect a stronger barrier. And the reason is because most of these sources are in fact government people who are authorized to leak, and the press knows that they have. Every one of these press reporters, whether it's Bernstein or anyone at Drew Pearson or anybody who's made themselves famous, do so because they have leaks from inside government. All these leaks are illegal, but they're all authorized. And the reason I can prove that is because, I mean, they do this every day. And if you can't tell me that the CIA and the FBI can't track who's leaking.
I would just ask you one question, and that is, who in the administration was punished for leaking the information about the fact that the ambassador's wife was a CIA agent and endangering her life because, of course, she exposed out a CIA agent, they can be killed. Who was punished for it?
Well, actually, I think she was, and her husband,
That's right, but what about who in government who violated the law was punished? What they've done is shift our attention to what the real issue is. That's right. The people really responsible don't get punished. They shift the whole issue to another issue, and then we say, oh, that reporter, he didn't tell the truth. He doesn't have any respect for the law. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest.
That whole thing was buried.
Right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I think Arlene's point that she made just before we went on is absolutely right. The important issue was buried, and what they've done is focus our attention on another issue so that nobody within the administration responsible for an illegal leak was ever punished. Would that be a correct statement, do you think, Joel?
Well, absolutely. And, ostensibly the courts are trying to make the press tell who in the administration was their source. But I just don't think that's ever going to happen. This is a collusory, protected environment between the courts, the press, and they're only going through the motions. But I think ultimately they will rule in favor of the press, and it will only strengthen the barrier to make sure that this secret leaking society to our press, these controlled leaks, these are disinformation leaks, for manipulating political purposes are maintained and even strengthened.
And have you noticed that nobody in the Bush administration has been punished for violating the law? I mean, that's the thing that everybody should understand. This person violated the law, and we don't know who they were. One fellow said, yeah, I gave the information. Well, where did he get this information from? Obviously, there was a collusion. If he was violating the law, is he going to be punished and put in prison? No, they're going to put the reporters in prison. What they've done is just they've confused the whole issue so we can't see it squarely, and this is what they do, and they do it so effectively. Go ahead, Joel.
Okay. Let's go and talk a little bit about the intelligence bill that was passed recently. It really is not a reform bill as it's pretending to be. It really is a new agenda. It is Patriot 2 all over again. You know, no one ever had access to the actual text of the bill. And now it's starting to leak out what these sections are, and it reads just like Patriot 1. They're reinforcing every weak point in Patriot 1 and that they wanted to in Patriot 2. And how did they get it through? It wasn't a second Patriot Act. It was the Intelligence Reform Bill. I mean, you started with a phony process called the 9/11 Commission, which was in essence a cover-up commission. These people all were government players. They knew about the conspiracy that was involved. They carefully evaded every one of the strong pieces of evidence that indicated government collusion in 9/11, covered up for that, and then issued a set of recommendations for change, which is, in essence said, you know, we have a problem of incompetence and lack of intelligence, so we need to strengthen those, centralize authority, add another layer of bureaucracy, and what they really are doing is giving the administration the opportunity to stop additional unauthorized aid rather than reform the intelligence system.
All right, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel is just saying that the basically this new intelligence legislation that is passed was really Patriot 2. They're not addressing the issues of gathering intelligence and trying to make up for the problems. There really weren't any problems beforehand. I am firmly convinced they knew exactly who all these terrorists were beforehand, because within 24 hours, they had their pictures, their names, or at least what they say was their pictures and their names. They knew all about their life histories. And you mean to tell me a bungling intelligence FBI and CIA had no idea who these people were? And within 24 hours, they knew everything about them and their life history? They even had pictures of them taking money out of ATM machines 6 months ahead of time. Do you honestly believe that? And Joel's point is that this new intelligence bill is simply a massive increase of government control over the lives of the people. It has very little to do with intelligence, everything to do with restricting the freedom of the American people. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, they're continuing on this juggernaut of dismantling the Constitution piecemeal. Right now you have, if Patriot 1 wasn't bad enough, Patriot 2 does a host of things that the second one couldn't. For example, you know, they had increasing the powers of FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, but you had to be a foreign agent. Now, under the intelligence bill, that's part of it is stripped away, and you don't have to be a foreign intelligence agent. Anyone can be investigated and surveilled permanently without a court order under FISA now, and that's supposedly got a secret star chamber type set of judges that authorizes these surveillance. We don't know who they are. We don't even know if they actually see anything because it's all a secret process.
They may not even exist. Who knows?
That's right. For example, now in tucked into this bill, of the intelligence bill, we have language which exempts anyone from any civil rights violations for surveilling someone that they doesn't turn out to be a terrorist. There's no prosecution. There's no civil suit possible. They have total immunity now. That's one thing that they needed. They didn't have under Patriot 2. They've paid lip service to civil liberties, installing or establishing a civil liberties protection officer. You know, that's just as bad as someone in the federal government who's been tasked to hear citizen complaints about vaccines. His job, really, because he works for the drug company and you know, it always comes out of the government or the drug bureaucracy. His whole mission is to disabuse people of the idea that the vaccine caused the death of their child. And so the Civil Liberties Protection Officer will guarantee that he will pay lip service to public concerns, but he will always rule against any complainant. You know, this new satellite program that has been leaked, in fact, the federal government is now threatening to, if they find out who leaked this information, to press charges. This was something buried deep in the bill. It was top secret. No one who knew about it, and there were several in Congress that had access to see that portion of the bill. Senator Jay Rockefeller, for example, said that it was totally unjustified, very, very wasteful and dangerous to national security. He said it was stunningly expensive. Now we know from the Washington Post article that it is a $9.5 billion new satellite system, supposedly has hardened EMP chips so that it can't be taken down by anti-satellite weapons. But I think what they're not telling is that this is also a second-level echelon-type spy system. This has the newest electronics that allows it to surveil the entire spectrum of civilian as well as military communication.
Now, do you think it's just for communications, or do you think it's one of these things where they can actually watch people?
No, it's surveillance. It is for watching people and surveilling communications.
Right, okay. And I think that's really what's so frightening, you know. In the name of, we've got those wicked communists, we've got to just certainly watch those communists. This is why we have to have all these satellite systems up there. It's really about watching the American people, but they can't tell the American people that. We have to get them to believe we really have an enemy, and if it isn't communism, why, it's Osama bin Laden or something else.
you know, there's so many aspects to this bill that have nothing to do with intelligence. Just like the Patriot Bill, there was stuff in there about money laundering and drug dealing. In this bill, you have cutting off material support for terrorists. This clarifies the current law, making sure that they can prosecute any Arab charities, for example, giving any money at all to any countries that may be suspected of terrorism. And we found one prosecuted last week, in fact, with stripping away almost all of their millions of dollars that they had collected for indigenous Palestinian children, and virtually no evidence that this money was going to terrorists. Now, I have no doubt that money that you give to the Palestinian Authority goes to terrorism. What's left over after being ripped off by the corruption schemes of Yasser Arafat and his henchmen at the head of Palestinian Authority, but there's a lot of the legitimate Muslim and Arab terrorists that are on, or Arab charities that are being targeted by this type of law. You know, you have money laundering and provisions in here that are providing more tools to invade people's financial privacy. This bill mandates, quote, better safeguards in the financial industry against financial fraud. I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with intelligence. This is Patriot 2 type stuff, and they are mandating upon banks, credit card companies, and everything, they have to submit data on everyone's, where they buy and where they sell, and this is going into a total information awareness program. All of this is in this bill, tucked into various language. There's even in there for enhancing airline security, has nothing to do with intelligence. The bill claims to improve the current passenger pre-screening system. This is more money for the kinds of biometric data that I have warned about that TSA is trying to push on people through doing these pat-downs. It doubles the current number of border control patrol officers. It has nothing to do with intelligence. It triples the number of immigration enforcement agents. Of course, this is useless without changing the regulations and restrictions that keep these agents from going after illegal aliens. Right now, they're not allowed to target them outside the border areas, and they aren't allowed to go down into the streets of Los Angeles or San Diego and round up illegal aliens and question whether or not they have proper ID. That's been ruled illegal by administrative agents. They're not allowed to go to normal crossing points in Arizona and New Mexico, where they come pouring, and they're supposed to sit in areas where they know that the Mexicans don't come across. And Border Patrol agents are just upset about this because their hands are tied. It's like rules of engagement in Vietnam.
And the first is, so police officers are not allowed to ask people if they are illegal aliens when they stop them, you know, for a speeding violation, things of that sort. And everything is being done to prevent efforts to stop the flow of illegal immigrants. Here in California, they estimate $10.5 billion a year just to care for the illegal aliens that are coming into this country and being welcomed, of course, by not only by the current administration, the Bush administration, but by Arnold Schwarzenegger here in California. So, I mean, what people don't understand is we are doing everything we can to encourage them to come in. But this will be a lot of little window dressing, and everybody's going to feel better if they hire more border guards, but unless they allow them to do their job, unless they allow the police to start arresting people all across this country who are here illegally, why, nothing's going to change.
That's right. And, of course, tucked into this bill also is the euphemistic improving security identification, requiring all driver's license and birth certificates to bear a standard set of characteristics, which will include biometric data. So Bush gets his national ID system through the back door, standardizes entry requirements for everyone coming into the U.S., asking anyone coming from a country other than Mexico and Canada to provide a secure document plus fingerprints. Notice, no restrictions on Mexicans coming across the border.
Right.
Now, this is done specifically so that you want to water down our population and intermix it with a multicultural agenda of conflict sufficiently so that there will be no or very little resistance of the poles to eventually eliminating the borders. And there are proposals right now in the Free Trade for America to eliminate all borders between Mexico and Canada. And that means just as the European Union is finding out, you have cross-border movements now unimpeded between industrialized and semi-industrialized countries, and it's really skewing labor markets there.
and the average American has no idea that our leaders of both political parties have no loyalty to America. Their goal is to destroy American sovereignty and merge us into this multicultural society, and of course, eventually expanding it, I believe, into Central America as well.
Notice the other things that have nothing to do with intelligence that are in this bill. Fostering better cross-cultural understanding. The bill creates a scholarship pilot program to provide opportunities for better cultural understanding between predominantly Muslim countries in the United States. There will be American-sponsored schools located in Muslim countries paid for by U.S. taxpayers. Now, if you replaced all of those with American-sponsored schools in Christian nations, this would be viewed as unconstitutional interference of church and state. But the U.S. can throw millions of taxpayer dollars at Muslim cross-cultural understanding, even getting our public school students to dress up, read out of the Koran, but you can't read out of the Bible. But this is just so hypocritic.
Well, it's very understandable if you understand that there's an organized effort to destroy Christianity. Then it all makes sense.
And look at this backdoor aid for our terrorist partners. It requires the president to develop a strategy for two countries to aid and give aid to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. Now, these are the two countries that are most responsible for having been conduits of financial aid to
Al-Qaeda, right?
Well,
what do they call Al-Qaeda?
Yeah, I think the only reason why, there's only one reason to explain why the U.S. will be giving aid to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan relative, and this is secret, too. Subsection B of this says that this program, this within 180 days when the administration has to enact this portion of the act, to detail a strategy for the future long-term engagement of the United States with Pakistan, requires a subsection that may contain classified information, meaning it's an invitation to say, I mean, the congressional writers who wrote this knew that they didn't want the American public to know what the U.S. was going to do with Pakistan, so they wrote right into the bill that it may contain a classified annex. Public isn't supposed to know. Now, this is very, very suspicious. There's lots of other countries that would be very instrumental in really going after Al-Qaeda. These are the two countries that have been heretofore sponsoring Al-Qaeda on behalf of the United States, and sure to form these people are the ones that are getting the largesse out of the secret funding in this intelligence bill.
If the American people really understood that, of course it was Pakistan and Saudi Arabia who financed the Taliban. They financed Al-Qaeda. I mean, they were pushing this radical form of Islam. And they're still doing it today. Nothing has changed at all, except the American people are not being told the truth.
And look at this position in the bill on strengthening the FBI. Enables the FBI to develop a specialized workforce with deep expertise in intelligence and national security. Well, what have they been doing since 9/11 if they suddenly have to provide special funding to develop a workforce? And this is what the FBI was supposed to be doing under Mueller ever since 9/11. But notice it provides retention bonuses, retirement age waivers, and higher pay for special skills for those who keep us safe at home. That's their words. These are the euphemistic recaps of the secret portions of this bill. But what this really means is you've got dark side agents that need bigger money and bonuses to keep them employed beyond their retirement age mandates. These are essential systems to keep dark side operators in the FBI employed even past the legal limits.
Well, I think we've got real problems in America today, and I really think we're moving towards a federal Gestapo. I believe that the FBI is massively expanding its power. It was only originally to be an investigative arm of government, and now it has become a federal police force. And I think that's rather scary. This is what our founding fathers feared, because they feared that government power would be misused.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got about 5 minutes more before, maybe 8 minutes more before we have to let you go. Is there anything else in that Patriot bill, would we call the intelligence bill?
There's plenty more that I'll be covering next week, and I want to cover, though, that another issue. The IRS is finally going after Joseph Bannister. Joseph Bannister has been an extremely effective vocal opponent of the IRS because he was an IRS criminal investigator, a special agent. And after years of researching the income tax code, Bannister came to the conclusion the government was lying to the American people, was not following the tax code, and he was a highly trained CPA and criminal investigator. He bolted from them. He actually went all the way up to Washington and asked them to dispute his findings. They fired him. You know, when he couldn't continue in good conscience his illegal activities, prosecuting people. So for years now, Joseph Bannister has been on the speaking circuit warning people about IRS problems, and eventually he got involved with tax protesters and advising them, and suddenly the IRS had reason to go after him. So he's been indicted along with co-defendant Walter Thompson of Redding, California. Walter Thompson's been a very courageous employer who's decided not to withhold taxes from his employees because he's found language that indicates that it really isn't required. And Bannister's got tied up with him sufficiently so that the IRS could take on Bannister at the same time. Now, the IRS has long been looking for an excuse to silence one of their own whistleblowers, and they couldn't do anything as long as Bannister just kept his own taxes straight and only exercised his free speech rights. But now that he aligned himself with a known tax protester, he opened himself up to prosecution. Now, I want to say this about the tax protest movement. Although I believe the tax protesters' arguments are mostly valid, I have long cautioned people not to fall into this tax protest trap. You see, the government keeps all these contradictions of law on the books just to lure in more conservatives for prosecution. You know, it would take them one bill that got the votes in Congress. They could close all of those loopholes, clarify all the language that the taxpayers, they've won court cases. The courts even let them win occasionally just to make sure that they have enough ammunition to go out and lure in another group of tax protesters, and then they shut them down and they send them to jail and just rule against the very thing that they said was legal. Now they rule as illegal. And you know, conservatives really have to understand that this is a trap system here.
You're absolutely right. I do exactly the same thing. I tell people exactly the same thing. You may be absolutely right, but it's not going to do you a bit of good when you're in jail.
Well, you know, tax posters keep telling their people that the insiders need these loopholes, and that's why they keep them open. This is just baloney. They don't need these loopholes. They have their own set of immunity. They have their own. I mean, just like Bernard Carrick, I'll bet you a lot of money that he never paid any taxes on that $6 million windfall that he got. But sure enough, he's not being prosecuted for that, and he won't be prosecuted for the nanny accident either.
Well, I really think, Joel, that why they do this is, of course, so the people will put all of their energy into fighting the taxes and trying to keep their money, which they're going to lose anyway, rather than joining us in what we're doing. I think education is far more effective than tax protesting, in my estimation. What are your thoughts?
Yes, you know, there are certain things that you can make up for, and that's not one of the things crucial right now.
Hold that thought right, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel, you should have got after me and reminded me to get your telephone number and your website out. So at this point, as we draw close to the end of the program, would you get out your website and your telephone number?
Well, the website for the World Affairs Brief is easy to remember. It's www.worldaffairsbrief.com. If people want a print edition of the World Affairs Brief as a sample, they can call a toll-free number, 877-518-5888. That's 877-518-5888. And ask for a sample of the latest World Affairs Brief. You might also, if you can't find it on Wrens.com, by scrolling down on their hot issues, you can call that toll-free number and specifically request I want a copy of called The Big Picture. That came out on December 3rd of of this year.
All right, fine. And, of course, that's 877-518-5888 and worldaffairsbrief.com. I go there first thing every morning. I certainly check a couple of things. I do my emails, and then I go down World Affairs Brief. Half a dozen articles there are really significant. I mean, the whole flock of great articles. I don't want to run my computer out of ink, but I take down and I actually print four or five of them that are excellent or outstanding, but you get a brief summary of all the most important news, so you don't have to spend hours up on the internet. And I really appreciate so much your access to your website. I think it's one of the finest ones we have.
Well, what you're referring to, Dr. Stan, is the free portion of the website, which is not the actual World Affairs Brief, but my two researchers, very capable researchers, know what makes for good articles that aren't getting proper emphasis in the press, and that's what gets on that website. Those articles and a brief synopsis of what's in the article is thrown up there, and you can click on that, read the whole article. Then every Friday I go through those articles and I pick out ones and tie them all together and do an analysis of the news based upon my understanding of what the ulterior motives are going on, you know, behind the scenes. And that's what makes, I think, the World Affairs Brief on each Friday very valuable, especially for people who go to the website and read the daily news, as my researchers put it up there.
Well, I really appreciate so much everything you do, Joe. We're going to have to let you go. We're out of time, but we'll look forward to hopefully we can get you on next week or the week and the week after that, and keep us abreast of these things that are going on and the information behind the scenes, what should be so obvious and nobody ever talks about. God bless. Appreciate everything you do.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you, and good night. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time I just have to mention that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon you to help us. As 5 hours every day, we reach out across America, somewhere on radio, 5 hours every day on the Internet, 4 hours every day on shortwave, 5 hours every day on satellite, trying to get you to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of America. And we're right on the very edge of financial chaos, of terrorist chaos, of massive expansion of the power of the federal government in the name of fighting terrorism, which, of course, is being financed by Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, which we are, in turn, financing ourselves. We've created, once again, the best enemies money could buy. Now, if you doubt that, you really need to get a book, which we have called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. Not talking about terrorism. It's talking about Nazism. It's talking about the Russians. It's talking about the North Vietnamese and who financed the North Vietnamese so that we could have a 10-year war over there and, of course, detract the American people from what was happening here at home and begin to undermine the very moral and legal foundation upon which our Constitution rests. So we hope that many of you would like to get the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or we have a video by the same name, my interview with Professor Sutton, who wrote the book. It's an interview I did back in about 1980. The Best Enemies Money Can Buy is must-watching to understand what's going on. And then, of course, we have a number of videos on Iraq, Iraq, the Untold Story, Iraq, the Road to World Government, Iraq, the Road to the New World Order. I think that's the latest one. But they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you really want to understand what Iraq is about, you have to understand what the Spanish-American War was about. We were lied to by the American government, telling us that the Spanish had sunk the battleship Maine, and that's why we had to go to war. And they lied to us about the Second World War, about the terrible atrocities that were being committed by the wicked Huns. And, of course, they were cutting off the breasts of the Belgian women and raping the Belgian women. And, of course, they were cutting off the hands of little Belgian boys. And, oh, they love those atrocity stories, to love getting into war so we can have more atrocities. And the Second World War, they never tell you that Adolf Hitler was financed by the West, not only before but during the war, and American corporations were actually producing much of the war material. American corporations were helping to finance Adolf Hitler. In fact, a man named Prescott Bush was indicted along with the other people in Brown Brothers Harriman during the Second World War for helping to finance Adolf Hitler during the war itself and then after the war. Why the CIA brought the Nazi scientists to America, about 1,000 of them, and helped 10,000 of the worst and most wicked Nazis escape to South America in the Rat Line, where Martin Bormann and Adolf Eichmann were eventually captured, but Mengele and Bormann and so many of the others lived out their life comfortably. With the help and protection of the CIA, that's covered in a wonderful four-tape set we have called Operation Keelhaul. That's Operation Keelhaul. We recommend that to you. You need to have the information. You need to understand what this is about. You need to understand Operation Northwood, where it's actually a previously top secret government document where they had laid out a plan to kill a lot of Americans, or blow up planes, or blow up American ships, and blame it on Fidel Castro to justify getting us into a war. You'll find that in its entirety. That's previously top secret government document in its entirety in our Iraq, the Untold Story syllabus. You'll want to get that. You'll want to get the video that goes with it. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, where you can, of course, listen directly or indirectly to our programs 5 hours a day. Won't get much accomplished, but you'll get an awful lot of information. Get other people to listen to our programs. Tell them about our programs and pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.